Well, there's another interesting little tidbit about his name, L.C. Wade. L.C. was his name.
Yes.
And when he joined the RAF, they, you know, put on the top of his card saying, you know, this guy doesn't have a Christian name. And that was unacceptable for the, you know, the bureaucracy and everything. So he had to come up with a name. And so he took the name of a cousin, Lance Cleo. Mm-hmm. And so that was the name he went by. And you've heard stories that years later, when somebody would call him Lance, he'd say, "Who's that?" Because that wasn't his name. His name was
L.C. That
was
actually the family.
Yeah.
I contacted them, and there's books and articles out, and most of them call him Lance. And I finally, you know, found the family, and I emailed and said, I'm interested in researching your relative, Lance Wade. And that was the response. Who's that?
Who's that?
So they do not call him Lance. They call him L.C. And so everything I write will be L.C. One thing I forgot, you know, when he enlisted in San Francisco, the story is that he told them that his father flew with the Lafayette Escadrille in World War I, because the vicar made a really good point. A lot of the folks that enlisted in the RAF did so because the American Army Air Force required college, and he didn't have college, and that's why, you know, he was before we got into the war, but that's really his impetus. He would have been in the Army Air Force before that. So he told him that his father was in the Lafayette Escadrille, and I asked the family about that, and they said his father never got higher than the top wire of a barbed wire fence. But there was somebody with the last name of Wade in the Lafayette Escadrille. I looked at their roles, and it's just a different Wade. It's somebody else. So,
backing up a little bit, after he got out of Spartan and he went to Canada from there, right?
Yep.
Did he
yes.
fly? Did he get transitioned into any airplane in Canada, or did he just go?
No, he went right to England, and then he has a lot of time in Miles Masters and then in the Hurricane.
So that he went from there to the Hurricane.
Yep.
So,
and then after training, he flew to a port, and they loaded up the Hurricanes on the Ark Royal Carrier. So he actually, and they went to Malta. He actually took a Hurricane off a carrier.
Huh. Okay. Anything else you want to say about L.C.?
Not really. The Knowles art is pretty neat. He had a U.S. flag on his RAF airplane with a boxing rooster. You might notice that on your way by. But so he was an American in the RAF and fighting for the good guys.
We got time for some questions here. As a matter of fact, is that fella right there, the two guys there, the blues, I see he's raising his hand. Cullen, you want to say something? This is my grandson, by the way.
I'd like to know, you talked about fabric on the Hurricane. Where is it fabric and where is it aluminum? And was there transition? You said wing versus fabric versus aluminum. When was the transition and what parts stayed fabric throughout?
Go ahead, Rick.
The early models had fabric on the wings. It wasn't for too long before they went with metal wings. It's the cockpit itself, they call it the doghouse, the wooden, it's all wood, and it's covered with fabric. And everything after that, all of the tail section, horizontal, vertical, rudder, elevators, are all fabric. All of the belly panels are wooden structure covered with fabric, and they're all detachable, so you can get in. You can't do much. You can't get in, really, because of all the streamlined flying wires that are in there. And Warren raised this question with me. Why did they use streamlined flying wires? Well, because they had them. They were making them. The stuff was there. They didn't have to do anything else. They could just order the size and stamp them out, or roll them out, and that was the way that was done.
Question here.
Easy question. When he flew from the Ark Royal to Malta, what squadron was he with?
He was still in the training squadron, and at that point he hadn't been assigned a squadron. So they delivered the airplanes to Malta, and then he got on a short Sunderland, and at some point they decided what squadron he was assigned to and taken to Egypt, and it was 3-3 squadron. Later with the Spitfire, it was 145.
Next question.
How often do you fly these? How many hours per year do you fly them? What maintenance do they require? And do you limit their Gs?
A lot.
We don't put a lot of Gs on them. We probably max Gs that we put on the airplanes is 4. typically 3.5 during our display. We try to put 30 to 50 hours a year on the airplanes. Every 25 hours, they take the cam racks off and torque the heads, change oil, check screens and filters. And every year, or if we get 100 hours in a year, then we go through a condition inspection on the airplanes. Is that, what do you think, Bernie? You got anything to add to that? Yeah. Try to take care of them.
So the Spitfire's got the Merlin in it for a motor. How about the Hurricane? Is that the same engine or is that different power plant?
Well, originally, the Hurricane had a... Well, the early Spitfires and the early Hurricanes had the same engines, right? Right? They all had Dash 3s, or Merlin 3s, I guess they were called. We've converted these two airplanes to have the same engines in them, so we have commonality in the fleet. They're both 224s, which is very similar to what would be in a Mustang, except they're just single-stage superchargers. They're still two-speed, but so we're getting a lot more horsepower than they would have originally had. Not this airplane. The Mark 9 had a bigger engine in it. But
yes, I was just curious of the big strake on this side of the airplane behind the exhaust.
Great question.
Is there a story for that?
Yeah.
It's to keep the muzzle flash out of your eyes at night. It's to cover up the exhaust flame so that you can see at night.
And to keep your mustache from getting singed if you got the canopy open.
Critical.
Yes, sir.
Great presentation, by the way. But one important question that I have is Lance's importance in what he did here. And you mentioned showgirls. How come we don't have any showgirls? They were his motivation.
You should have been here a little earlier. We had one.
Yeah.
Yes. She did a very good job, right? Yeah,
she's great.
Just to add a little levity to your
presentation. We'll add that to the next presentation. Right, Bruce?
You got it.
Over here. Next.
Actually, while she's getting that mic, you're asking about how much these planes get flown. I think that's one thing, too, about Dakota Territory Air Museum is that these aren't hangar queens. We really make an effort to get these things out and bring them to air shows and veterans events and things like that and really share them and tell the story of these planes. And so they get flown.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. Would three different... shall we say three equally rated pilots, so a German Messerschmitt pilot, a Hawker Brit pilot, and a Spitfire pilot, how would they fight each other? You know, what were the strengths and advantages and disadvantages of these
Good
three
question.
Aircraft?
I'd just win. The Hurricane, I think, will outturn the Spitfire. The Spitfire has probably got a little more vertical yo-yo stuff. If I was fighting the Hurricane with the Spitfire, I'd probably go vertical, and he'd probably try to turn inside me. I think that would be the difference. Although, in a regular climb, the Hurricane outclimbs the Spitfire, so you'd have to have an altitude advantage in the beginning and use that energy to keep your speed up. This runs into a little bit more of a speed wall than that airplane does. As you dive it, it's a little more draggy. I've never had an opportunity to fly a German fighter. I don't know. I think the late model, the G-109s and the 190s, were extremely capable airplanes, and the 109 with the slat system was a pretty good turning airplane. Terrible visibility, big gun, a lot of range. You know, the 109s had cannon, and I think that's why they went to cannon on this. So if you were a good shooter, you could take a long shot on it. I think this airplane more of a get right up behind the guy and blow it out of the sky. And I think the climb rate and everything else on this airplane is why they primarily used them for bombers in the Battle of Britain. They would, I think they dispatched the Spitfires for the fighters as much as they could and the Hurricanes for the bombers. Boy, dogfight, I think it's all so much personality and airplane. It's what a pilot's good at and, you know, everything else. And then I just think there's an awful lot of situational awareness in the whole thing. The guys that could see good, that could gather up the battle plan, that could see what everybody else was doing and enter into that stuff and then fight that battle accordingly was really what it was, you know. And it is a great question, and it's a question that we all ask ourselves every day, and it'd be fun to go give it all the world without bullets. I don't want to do it with bullets. But
Warren, while we're on that subject of flying, how about landing the airplane in crosswinds?
You know, it's a great airplane, and it's another great question. People look at the airplane, they see a narrow gear. Both these airplanes don't have steerable tailwheels, nor do they have locking tailwheels, which you would think in a big high horsepower tailwheel airplane would make them a little bit squirrely, but they've got such effective rudders, it's amazing how little speed you need in them. And the Spitfire, is there any glider pilots in the crowd? Because if you've a glider, you got a center wheel and you can hold the wing down forever in a crosswind. You can do the same thing in this airplane. It's got, you know, you land a Mustang or the Hurricane a little bit that way. When one wheel touches, the other one's coming down, and now you're dealing with that wing and stuff. Where the Spitfire, you can just kind of hold the wing down. So they're really pretty straightforward airplanes. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
When you fly these cross country to a show, what altitude do you like to fly at, and what cruise speed? I know the fuel consumption's high.
Yeah. We came down at 9,500 feet with the two airplanes, and we were burning about 58 gallons an hour and doing about 205 knots true.
And the altitude really depends on who's flying that, because it's miserable on the inside hot. Yeah. So you go high.
Yeah, we were climbing to try to get him to where he was going to survive the hour-long trip.
Air conditioner doesn't work, huh?
Yeah, well, we don't have them installed right now. But
they're in there.
There's two little air vents at the base of the windshield that stick up about this high. And when you're climbing, the air is coming through the wheel wells, and it feels great. You got all this air, and you think, ah, man, that's pretty good. And you roll the nose over, and all of a sudden it starts sucking air from the radiator up through the cockpit. And it literally, I would say it's running 135 to 140 degrees in the cockpit, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah. Something like, I mean, it's hot, hot in there. Yeah. And the air is going out those air vents instead of in them. So
yeah, if you reach up...
The mic died.
If you reach up and put your thumb in the air vent, it actually gets cooler because it stops sucking the hot air from the radiator up. Yeah.
So I was about halfway home from Ray's shop, and I went over to a buddy of mine's place in Pierre, South Dakota. We were getting gas, and they make these little blue Phillips 66 oil nozzles that come with a quart of oil. Took my jackknife and cut the threads off and stuffed one on each side and put horns out there, and they worked perfect. Then you had air. So if you see pictures of this airplane sometime and you go, what are them funny blue things? That's what they are.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. This is fantastic. We really want to watch these power up and taxi off. When is the next scheduled time when you'll be doing that, and where will they be?
We're scheduled to fly in the air show tomorrow and Saturday with the airplanes, and most likely because of the crowds, they'll get pushed back or towed back to the tie downs today. We hadn't really arranged for anything to start them today, but we'll be flying in the show tomorrow. We're opening the World War II segment of it. I would guess it'll be around 2 o'clock. Yep.
Yes, sir. Wait just a minute. Let me get you a mic. This will be our last question. I want to thank you folks for coming today.
Any cockpit heat in the wintertime for the pilots?
Don't need any in the Hurricane.
Yeah, they did have heat available in the airplanes. Most of what those guys dealt with was clothing, you know, because they were changing altitude so much and stuff, but they got dressed extremely warm when they went to altitude in the Spitfire. You see the pictures, the reenactors are out here, but they are multiple layers of clothing and stuff, which I can't hardly imagine getting in the airplane with all that on, because...
And most of the airplanes had provisions for hot suits, so they would put on their wool-lined clothes, and when they got to altitude, they'd turn them on, and I imagine when they were fighting, they went right to off.
By the way, we want to thank David Hartman for our video. Unfortunately, he's not here this year, but he did a lot of work for that, and we want to thank him for that. Do we have veterans in the audience here? Will all our veterans stand up? Raise your hand. I want to thank everybody. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your service. Yeah. Bruce, Warren, our group over here, we want to thank you guys for your time and bringing the airplanes here. You just can't say how much we appreciate it.
And thank you for your interest.
Yeah, great to be here.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you much.
Thanks, guys.